Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday. It's May 22nd. Currently 48 degrees and mostly sunny skies here in Old Town Park City. Heber City reporting 51 degrees. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good Thursday morning, KPCW listeners. It's time for your Thursday forecast for the Wasatch Back. As we look at your forecast, we are going to be looking at some warmer conditions moving our way. Lots of sunshine expected for us as we go throughout the day. Expect those temperatures to climb. We'll be heading into the low 70s for us today in Park City for high temperatures. But in the Heber Valley, get ready. We're looking at high temperatures in the upper 70s. To right around 80 degrees out there, so it is going to be a warm afternoon. A very slight chance. We're talking about a 10% chance of an isolated pop-up shower, but for the most part, we'll stay dry today. As we go into your Friday, look for more sunshine, a nice end to the work week with overnight lows dropping down into the 40s for your Friday morning, but Friday afternoon, we're looking at those highs climbing back into the low 70s in Park City. We'll be seeing those highs in the upper 70s and lower 80s there for the Heber Valley. So a beautiful, beautiful end to the work week as we head into the holiday weekend. Your Saturday will feature partly cloudy skies. We'll see breezy conditions as well. Temperatures start off into the 40s. It will get a little cooler, though, by the afternoon with those northwesterly winds. So high temperatures in Park City only in the upper 60s by the time we get towards your Saturday afternoon with highs only in the mid 70s there in the Heber Valley. Along with that disturbance moving through, we could see a couple of isolated showers developing as we go into your Saturday afternoon and Saturday evening. It doesn't like a big washout or a lot of heavy rainfall, but a few isolated showers will be possible on your Saturday. As we move into your Sunday, we're looking at temperatures back down into the 40s to kick off your Sunday. High temperatures on Sunday afternoon, upper 60s to near 70 degrees. We'll be in the mid-70s again for the Heber Valley with partly cloudy skies as we dry things back out. And heading into the all-important Memorial Day forecast, we've got temperatures in the 40s to kick off the day. High temperatures in Park City will be into the low 70s for your Memorial Day afternoon. We're looking at high temperatures around 80 degrees in the Heber Valley, so warming back up just in time for Memorial Day, and we stay in the warm weather heading into the middle of next week. That's your latest forecast from the ABC Forecast Center. I'm meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Okay, sounds great. Thanks. Well, stay tuned in just a minute. We'll be checking in with our first summer trails report with Wasatch Trails Foundation Executive Director Mia Hugh. Later on, we'll be talking with Summit County Council Member Chris Robinson. Park City Board of Education Member Nick Hill will be joined by Superintendent of Schools Lindsay Huntsman, taking a look at Tuesday's board meeting, and the Director of Exhibits and Visitor Experience at the Swanna Preserve and Eco Center, Hunter Klingensmith, with details on some upcoming events, opportunity, volunteer opportunities, and exhibits. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. On the phone now with Wasatch Trails Foundation, we have Executive Director Mia Yu. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. So for the Basin Rec area, trails are dry below Mid-Mountain. The team was able to get all of Summit Park, Lower Canyons area, Robs, and the UOP area cleared this week. For mountain trails, I know everyone's getting really excited about riding on Park City Mountain, but users should be aware of a handful of construction tasks that are going on. So this year, CMG will have some intermittent closures below Claim Jumper. There's going to be some restoration work done there. At the bottom of Park City Mountain, near the first time lot, first time return, or it's also known as Hall Pass, that will be closed for the time being for construction, and it will be open when the lifts at Park City Mountain start turning. They said that everything mountainside, such as Sweeney's, Gravedigger, and 420, are all good to go. And there's also some construction at Quinn's in Round Valley as well. A good place to see all of this information is pctrails.org. You can see all of the up-to-date trail conditions there. There's also some construction at the base of the canyons, and it can make it a little bit tricky to access Hollies, so do be careful when you are riding over there. For us, we have pretty much everything in the Heber Valley is good to go, including Jordan Hill Ridge Trail System, Blue Sage Ranch, and almost everything in the Wasatch Mountain State Park, aside from the upper section of the Wow Trail, still has some down trees and snow patches, and we'll be getting up there as soon as we can. And then also there is the South Summit Trails Foundation is having their grand opening celebration of their Oakley Bike Park on Saturday at 9 a.m. if anyone's interested in attending.
Okay. Can you talk to us just a little bit about some of the plans that you have for this summer in terms of new construction or just maintenance work?
Yeah, absolutely. We are currently working on a restoration grant for the entire Dutch Hollow area that we've been doing for started last season. So working on bringing a lot of those trails that we started last season up to current industry standard as best we can and clearing back all of that sagebrush that's grown in. We also are working with Mountain Trails on the infamous Bonanza to Wow connection. I would say we're probably maybe 20 to 30% done with some of the trails in that trail connection. There'll be one main connection that goes from the BLT trail, the Bonanza Loop Trail, up and over kind of that big hill into the state park. There will be one trail that is a climb and hike only trail from WOW, and one trail that is a downhill mountain bike only trail that goes back to WOW, so a little loop on our side. And then there also will be a hiking spur that will loop you back to the upper WOW parking lot. So hikers will have an option there as an out and back, or I think it's going to be around a 2 to 3 mile loop hike from the top of the WOW parking lot. In addition to that, we're also working on a hand-dug advanced downhill mountain bike trail that parallels the bottom of the WOW trail. So we're hoping to open that trail up sometime in June. And we're working pretty closely with Wasatch Search and Rescue as well to ensure that there are plenty of GPS markers and everyone's aware of this new advanced downhill trail that we're bringing into our system. The last big project that we have is actually an asphalt pump track here in Southfield Park. It's a little deviation from backcountry trails, but it is an incredibly accessible amenity for all wheel users, all levels, and all ages. So we just got our grant funding for that. We're super excited about it.
Okay, so that'll be built this summer then.
It will.
Yeah, great. Okay, what's the best place to get more information about Wasatch Trails Foundation?
You can check out our website, wasatchtrails.org. We are also on Facebook, but we're honestly the most active on our Instagram, if anybody has Instagram. Otherwise, signing up for our email list is a good option, too, if you're not an Instagram user. And you can do that on our website, wasatchtrails.org.
Okay, Mia, thanks for the update.
Thanks, Leslie.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up this morning on Cool Science Radio, right after the local news hour, today's guests include Jamie Farrell, chief seismologist at the Yellowstone Volcano Observatory, about their recent study of the Yellowstone caldera. Good news for all of us. Then a conversation with Keegan Maelstrom about what it is that has helped crocodiles and alligators survive for more than 250 million years. All of that coming up on Cool Science Radio, of course, heard every Thursday between 9 and 10. We're on the phone now with a recap of the Summit County Council meeting as Council Member Chris Robinson. Good morning, Chris. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Leslie.
Let's start with House Bill 356. Yesterday, the Council formally created the commission that will draw 5 voter districts. It's made up of mayors from all of Summit County's towns, the county clerk, as well as an appointee from the unincorporated county. Now, the county attorney says that includes the mayor of Hideout. So what do we make of that?
Well, the House Bill 356 said all the mayors in the county, and I guess Hideout has some territory in the county, which makes the Hideout mayor one of those 7, is what I make of it. I don't know. You know, it was something that kind of came out of the blue because we didn't really, we thought we have 6 mayors, right? But we have apparently we have a 7th potentially.
Okay. So is this something that would be addressed in the interim session? Because Wasatch County is telling me that they're not even bothering to form a commission because they've been assured by the legislature that they don't need to form a commission because things will be taken care of. The unintended consequences will be taken care of in an interim session.
I think that's conflating 2 issues. Yes, Wasatch County has has a special dispensation apparently that they're going to get a fix in September. That doesn't preclude a mayor that has a jurisdiction that straddles county lines from participating in this districting commission, I don't think.
Okay. I mean, I'm guessing they could add a line saying there's got to be a certain amount of acreage in Summit County to actually be considered a mayor of Summit County.
The problem is the work will all be done by the special session in September unless there's one that's held in the interim.
Okay.
Meaning that the commission, our understanding is we need to follow the law, which was by June 1, we need to have this commission formed. And since we're going on city tour next week, that meant yesterday. So we did our job and have created the commission and the rules by which it'll be governed. And we'll just keep going.
Okay. Has Summit County reached out to the Ralph Severini, the new Hideout mayor, about his new responsibility?
I don't believe so. I don't know that we've reached out to any of the mayors. Obviously, the traditional Summit County, the other six know of House Bill 356. We've had COG meetings and so forth, and they know about it. But I think the way I understand it works, it's either the elected mayors that serve on the districting commission or a designee. And if it's a designee, we would need some written evidence of the process by which such person was designated. And so I don't know. Maybe we need to reach out to them, but I suspect that they will have heard about it.
Yeah. Now, the council appointed Melina Stevens, a former county council member, as the unincorporated representative. Why Melina?
Well, she knows all the mayors, has a good rapport with them. She knows the county. She knows county government well. She's a good thinker. She's level-headed. She'll do a great job. We thought it was a good fit.
All right. And when does the commission start meeting and present the boundaries to the county council?
I don't know for sure. I think there's a deadline. Maybe toward the end of the summer when the work has to be done. So I would think the commission would want to get after it.
All right. Now, is it the county council that formally adopts the boundaries?
The county council has what appears to us maybe a rubber stamp right at the end. I don't think that it doesn't appear like we could say, oh, we don't like what you did. We want you to do it over or do it this way. We do have to. HB 356 does require the county council to approve the district maps, the districting map, but I don't think it gives us a lot of discretion to alter it.
All right, so the county council doesn't sound like it could influence or kind of weigh in on the commission
That's been our concern is that some 60-70% of the residents of Summit County live outside the municipalities, but the way HB 356 was passed, it only gives the lone appointee by the county council. That's the only representation they get, and that's. We tried to make changes, and had there been a special session this month, like I think there was talk of one that would have been held yesterday. In fact, the legislature has interim Wednesdays, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, and there was initially talk of a special session that might have occurred in May. But when that got punted to September, then, we need to stick to the law, although Wasatch County, has been told that, don't worry about it, we'll fix it for you, don't stick to the law. We haven't been given that direction, so we're following the law and trying to do our job under it.
All right, let's move on to the Klein-Dolly property. The council reviewed the six proposals for this parcel next to Jeremy Ranch Elementary School. Each development team had a half hour to present their vision. So did county staff review and score the projects internally?
They've done some work on it internally. We were really grateful for the quality of the presentations, and we have some work to do to, you know, I think our next step will be to identify one that we want to explore further. None of the proposals on their face, it's not like it's, you know, a complete proposal. If we loved, you know, one of them or more than one, that we just say, yeah, here, sign up. They all require a lot more elaboration and a lot more negotiation to refine. None of them is perfect. I think it's a matter of, in my judgment, it's a matter of looking at the of starting with choosing one that we think we like the theme the best and seeing if it can be negotiated to something that works for us.
Yeah. So if the staff did kind of score the projects internally, which ones scored the highest? And those are the ones that you're going to follow up with?
I'm not at liberty to talk about any of that.
All right. The RFP did ask for a mix of housing, commercial, park space, and a new fire station. What did all the projects have in common?
Well, they all have housing. Most of them have some small amount of commercial. They all have set aside an acre to an acre and a half to replace the Kilby Road fire station. And some of them had some suggestions on what they would do with that acre plus that's over on Kilby Road as the new station gets built and as that becomes surplus property. They all tended to respect East Canyon Creek and the open spaces there, and they attempted to create trail connections and parks and green spaces that would bleed into the Swanner, you know, Swanner Eco Center owns a lot of land on the north side of the interstate, north of East Canyon Creek, and to blend in with that and take advantage of the open space connection there.
So,
go ahead.
Of those developers that did come up with ideas what to do with the old fire station on Kilby Road, so, I mean, what were some of those ideas?
Well, some of them were to develop it into some kind of, additional townhomes or condos, you know, some kind of multifamily project. Some of them were saying it ought to be repurposed into the existing building, ought to be repurposed into for some user that could take advantage of the investment that's there and not raise it and start over. Those kind of things.
Yeah. Now, so is Summit County, the property belongs to Park City Fire? I mean, is it just going to be an even swap, or is the property Summit County's anyway, certainly at Klein Dolly?
Yeah, the property at Klein Dolly is Summit County's. The fire district owns the station on Kilby, and the mechanics of how that swap occurs, or what, if there's additional cash boot that needs to equalize values, or all of that is yet to be determined. But it does make sense to me to have a new station over there on Klein Dolly. Things have changed a lot, and it would be a bigger, better one, and it's be well located there.
All right. Now, do any of the projects require a rezone?
All of them do, probably. So you see that was specified in the RFP. We really only have a couple of zones that are applicable. There's the rural residential, which has a maximum density of one unit per 20 acres. And then, but we do in the community commercial have the ability to have multifamily, but there isn't a smaller lot, like detached. Like if you say you wanted to do one of these projects that has 50 small lot single family homes or townhomes or, you know, duplexes or whatever, we don't have a zone for that.
Okay.
So there would have to be some adjustments made. We have, if you want a single family home, base density is 1 to 20, period. So, you know, here we have 17 acres usable, 29 total, let's say, and that'd be good for one lot.
Right.
If it were in rural residential.
Okay. Let's see. Moving on, the council did have a discussion about the $30 million in bonds that it issued last year for the renovations to the Skullcandy building and purchase of it. I mean, apparently rates have declined substantially. So does the county refinance here?
Well, we paused it. The rates haven't declined that substantially. It's, you know, like maybe 0.75 percentage point. And what was brought to light yesterday is that when the county issued the bonds back in 2024, it did what was called a direct sale, where Bank of Utah bought them, and it under terms that allowed the county to refund them at any time, which is unusual. Most of the time when you issue bonds, you're locked in for a 10-year period. You can't decide, you know, change your mind, say, hey, here's a better deal, we want to refinance. And but we paid a little premium in the interest rate in order to get that flexibility, because, you know, there was some turbulence in the bond markets, and there still is. And so the issue for me was, and I talked a lot about this at yesterday's meeting, is now the time to pull the trigger on this one-time opportunity we have to refinance? Because what was being proposed is we'd be now locking into a 10-year call. In other words, we'd be locked in for 10 years to whatever rate. And is this enough savings? Is this the right time to use that one-time opportunity that we secured by doing a direct sale last year? And so we're going to further analyze that and decide whether the savings are worth using that one-time opportunity.
All right. And what are we talking about in terms of savings?
Well, the all-in rate of the current bonds, we're paying about 4.9%. And if we were to refinance now and give up the call feature, we would, based on what the financial advisors said, we might get a 4.2%. So we would save 0.7%, which equates to about $150,000 a year, which sounds good, except that most of what of that 0.7% is we get because we're giving up the call feature. So anyway, it's probably more than your listeners want to know on the details, but we're going to look deeper at it.
Okay. The bond was, again, for the purchase that the county purchased for office space.
We spent $17,500,000 to buy the building, and we grossed that up to $30 million to give us flexibility to remodel it and do other things with it. But of course, we haven't spent that money.
Right. So, any update though on how that other space will be used?
Well, I think we're planning on moving the library over there and creating a lot of county support office there, as well as having a space wherein the council can meet instead of the Richens Auditorium, and having a bigger meeting space.
Okay.
That would be flexible, where if you just have a normal council meeting where nobody shows from the public, it's a small space. And if we have a big public hearing and, you know, hundreds come, it would expand out.
Okay. Anything else, Chris, you wanted to mention from yesterday?
No, I don't think so. It was a good meeting.
Okay. Appreciate your time.
Likewise. Thank you.
That's Summit County Council Member Chris Robinson. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. The Park City Board of Education met on Tuesday in the studio with details about the upcoming budget approval and the latest grandma report from the Attorney General's office. I have the Superintendent of Schools, Lindsay Huntsman, along with the President of the Board of Education, Meredith Reed. Let's start with the budget. We heard Tuesday that there will be no tax increase. Instead, you'll be pulling about $2.6 million from reserves.
That is correct.
The board, you know, instructed Lindsay and Randy and that we were trying very hard to avoid a tax increase from our side of things, the tax part, the local levy. And they really worked hard. It's not a finalized budget, but they've, you know, it's been a team effort with the principals, with Lindsay with Randy to really make sure that that would happen.
Yeah, so we had heard that this would be like in the final year of the tax increases for the contracts that were approved several years ago for staff.
Correct. It was projected that there would be a tax increase because next year will be the third year of the compensation package. But we were able to work collectively and identify ways in which we could become more efficient to avoid a tax increase.
So where's all the money coming from?
So as people have left, we've looked at ways in which we can absorb positions and really being stewards of our taxpayer dollars. And also there will be a one-time fund from our fund balance that will shift over into our budget to avoid the tax increase. That is not something that's sustainable and we don't intend to do in future years, but we have a healthy fund balance which affords us this opportunity to do it one time.
Okay, so have you hit the limit on your savings though? I mean, is that part of the reason that you need to pull money out of it?
You know, we are well above what is recommended. We have a healthy fund balance.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we actually, they don't want it to get too high. So there is a benefit to pulling some from that. And I think as with next year, once we've completed the realignment, which is happening right now with Treasurer closing and with other retirement, I mean, it's sort of an evolving process. But we're also, you know, looking at other ways from the board's perspective of what we can do for our student enrollment and for other levers that we have controls over.
Yeah, and I think it's important to distinguish. People may see an increase, but that's due to the basic school levy that is set by the state. That is not set by us. And if your home's value is increasing, that's where you might see that tax increase. But I just want to be clear, that is not the local school district. That is the legislature who does that.
Okay, and we had heard earlier this year from Business Administrator Randy Upton that the savings that we were seeing were going to be used for the redo of the athletic fields, and that's why we were able to do it without any tax increase there as well. So tell us, what is the status of the athletic fields? Sounds like the plans didn't meet city setbacks.
Yes, yeah, so we did receive approval back in April from the Planning Commission, a conditional use permit. And then the following week, they brought to our attention that there was an ordinance that was passed in 1986 that allowed for a 100-foot setback from Lucky John, and it couldn't have a recreational facility. So when that came to light, we started looking at ways in which we could pivot. It's not doable to shift that building to the south side, and it would likely delay our timeline, and we want to stick as close to that timeline as possible, which is why we made a decision to pivot and shift to an east-west design.
Okay, so the plan's been fixed. Does it need further approvals?
It will need further approvals. Our architect, MHTN, is working on that design, and they will present two options to the board at the June 17th meeting.
All right.
But we are going to go ahead and get started with the treasure aspect of the sports facility. So the new baseball and softball field, the soccer fields that are going there, and we will go ahead and start with the demolition of Treasure, the school building, in September.
Yeah, late fall is when we plan to start the demo of Treasure Mountain Junior High.
Okay, so no specific date set at this point?
No, we're looking at, you know, we want to get the school year started. In the event we need that building, I would not want to find ourselves in a situation where we demoed this June and then for whatever reason construction wasn't complete at Park City High School.
Yeah, so you're just going to be using big equipment, or are we going to see like an implosion like we do in Las Vegas? Yeah.
It will not be Las Vegas. It will not be Treasure Mountain's there one day and gone the next. It will be a process, and we want to ensure safety and that we are doing it in the way in which it is intended to be done, focusing on weekends when school is not in session.
Okay. Let me see. We heard that 15% of the budget is for non-personnel use. Does that mean 85% of the budget goes to pay for staff? And then the 15% covers all maintenance, operation, and construction, huh, and capital?
Yes. Randy is our, I have notes on it because I don't have all the details in my head, but yes, that is, I think what you're saying is correct. If I'm recalling, I'm trying to get to
I'll bring
notes.
Randy in.
Yeah, actually, I think next month would be great to have Randy in because the budget will be finalized. Then we just got sort of the preview, and where we're at right now was what we covered. So I would absolutely send Randy in.
Yeah, and I'd say that 85%, we have lower class sizes and staff-to-student ratio than you might see in other school districts, which is why that number is higher than some of our neighboring school districts.
I want to talk a little bit about the enrollment numbers. It sounds like they are dropping again. More than 100 fewer students are expected for next school year. When do you expect those numbers to pick up again? Because we have heard, you know, we got a lot of new construction that's happening, and it was because of the growth that was coming.
Yeah, I don't know that construction was ever due to growth. Construction was due to realignment, meaning ninth grade going to the high school and eighth grade going to Ecker Hill. Prior to expanding those spaces, we would not have been able to accommodate ninth grade at the high school. We currently have teachers sharing rooms, teachers on carts, and that's the same at Ecker Hill. So I don't know that construction was ever approved due to increased enrollment. It was to account for the closing of Treasure Mountain and shifting an additional grade level to both secondary schools.
Okay. So in terms of lower enrollment, what does that mean? Does that mean that you're now overstaffed with fewer students? And what do you do with staff?
You know, in K-5, families have a lot of choice in Park City. So you might see low enrollment in our K-5 grades, but that's not true when you enter the 6-12 grades. And the board continues to have conversation about whether or not to open enrollment. I think you will see that as an agenda item on the June meeting, and I'll let Meredith speak more to that.
Right. We are certainly interested in filling in. I mean, we certainly are, as parents and as boards and as educators, we value having smaller class sizes, and I think our students really benefit from that. But there, of course, is that balance that we need to achieve. We can be very targeted in where we open enrollment, and we want to make sure we make the right choices about where we do that. And so I think in the past, we definitely wanted to make sure that the realignment got done, and now looking into the future, we want to make sure that we're putting students where we can best accommodate them.
Yeah. So in terms of staff, though, I mean, will there be layoffs, or do you going to be able to put people somewhere else? Or, I mean, who stays, who goes? Or do you have enough attrition to take care of that?
Yeah, I think you're going to see attrition. We recognize that it may appear as though we are overstaffed, and that is largely due in part to Treasure Mountain closing. We were very intentional about not laying people off just because we're decommissioning a school. So it may appear, but I think, you know, next year is the last year of that 3-year compensation package. And I anticipate we will see a high number of retirees.
Okay. The school board also posted a new military policy for review. It won't get approved until the next board meeting. Why was this needed?
Well, I think it was just raised as an issue, and we wanted to make sure that we were covering these important things. But again, I would just point, as a former reservist in the Air Force, that there is federal law, the Uniformed Services Employment Act, USERRA, that says whether, you know, how reservists can take their leave, that they get their job back when they come. I mean, there's already federal law out there that's very specific about how employers work with Guard and reservists. So this just was our side of making it official from the school district side.
All right. Well, we didn't have anything like this. And again, we saw something with Mike Tanner in terms of using reserve time as paid time off. So is that part of this?
I think that's one of the factors. We didn't have a formal policy, and we felt that we needed a formal policy. We had already been following the law, and it doesn't result in any changes to our current employees who serve.
Okay. You know, I just want to make note that we received an email from Anonymous, who wouldn't give us his or her name, saying that they find our continued reporting on the local news hour to be, quote, despicable. Is that how you see this reporting? Because we keep getting grandma requests that we have filed back into the station. It takes time, as you know. But we still have so many unanswered questions about what's happened over the last 6 months. So, I mean, is that how you guys see this, as despicable reporting?
I think we are coming here in good faith to answer your questions. There are obviously aspects of this that we cannot share with you, and we are very limited in what we say about personnel issues. We're absolutely being as honest and forthright about all the things that we are able to talk about. The AG's report we just got from you yesterday, because it wasn't sent to us. because there were no findings from that report. So I don't think there's any new information there. We are, as a board, thrilled that we have Lindsay here as our new superintendent, and we're really looking towards the future.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would add to that, we're concerned that at times this show gives a platform to grievances that aren't fully informed or based in fact. And when that happens, it gives weight to claims that don't reflect the full story. And from my perspective, we all share a responsibility to create conversations that are thoughtful and honest, because our kids are paying attention to the adults that are modeling this behavior.
Yeah, I understand that there's a difference between what's appropriate and what's not appropriate dealing with personnel. But as you know, there is a huge difference between a personnel matter and what should be reported, because we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars of taxpayer dollars being spent here. You know, the district has said that the allegations against Mr. Tanner were investigated and that there was no wrongdoing. The AG's office, however, did not look into all of the allegations. Now we do have a document from the AG's office, and it appears that the district told one story and the AG's office a different one. I want to go back to the conversation that I had with Ned Riley and Michelle Dininger in March, that interim superintendent Caleb Fine publicly described Mike Tanner's special contract as a permanent money-saving move. Caleb requested a correction from KPCW. He told me he never said that. It wasn't true. The AG office report, however, says that Park City School District did tell them that Tanner's contract was permanent and money-saving. So let's set the record straight. What version is correct? Was Tanner's security director contract temporary or permanent? It was a $77,000 contract.
All special assignment contracts are temporary. I can't speak for past leadership, but what I can tell you is I am reviewing every special assignment contract. They are going to be reviewed on an annual basis. No employee is guaranteed one special contract from one school year to the next school year. We've made some shifts. Previously, the superintendent's signature were not on those special assignment contract forms. That has been added in the last couple of weeks, and I'm currently working with our board to revise our policy. I stumbled upon some procedures that were being implemented in a neighboring school district, and they are very specific and outlined in terms of identifying which employees qualify for a special assignment contract, what work qualifies for a special assignment contract, and you will see those come into play here in the next couple months.
Yeah, I mean, I would echo that the board is also very concerned about how these have been allocated in the past, and we are interested in having more oversight in that, not creating a more cumbersome process, but just more accountability within our system. And we've made that very clear to Lindsay, and she's doing that, so.
All right, and as we know, the taxpayers also funded an internal investigation to all of this to the tune of almost $4,300 of what former COO Mike Tanner was doing for the last 6 years. So when will the public get those findings, since basically we funded them?
I anticipate that report will be released here in the next week or two.
Okay. I guess you had told the society, DeMago, I wish LSDM, that the district never told the AG's office about the special assignments contract that district employees had held, and said changing the policy is your first order of business, which you have jumped on. But I guess that just indicates a problem, because I had Nick Hill in here last month telling me that all of the contracts were proper. So did you get some information that you were not to mention those special assignment contracts to the AG's office?
I haven't spoken to the AG's office, so I think I have been misquoted or someone misunderstood. What I did say, meeting with that group, because someone brought up this external investigation into our special assignment contracts and policies across the school district. We have never conducted an internal or an external investigation into all policy and all special assignment contracts. So I'm not sure where that information came from.
We also have emails from Caleb Fine showing last December that the school district did know that Mike Tanner had been dishonest about being in the military before we paid him $200,000 to leave. And Meredith, you confirmed that to us earlier this year. I guess people are asking, why didn't we just fire him? Why did we have to pay him $200,000 to leave?
You know, that's a personnel matter, and everyone's entitled to due process, and there's facts that I will never be able to discuss publicly.
So what makes that privilege, though? I mean, because he's no longer an employee, he did sign a separation agreement that basically he will not pursue any legal action against the district.
That only covers up until that agreement. That is not about going forward. So we are still bound to keep those personnel issues private.
All right. And one other question here, because we heard from Colton Elliott from the PIO office that the school board was not required to vote on Tanner's separation project. So were the financial terms of his departure your decision, Lindsay, or did Meredith, did the board have any input here?
So Colton is correct. Lindsay, the board hires and fires our business administrator and our superintendent. We put Lindsay in charge of making the personnel decisions for the district. I will say that it was a complex issue that we did discuss with her, and we supported her decision entirely.
Okay, I got one other question here, because this is something that the anonymous email said, that the mechanic at the bus barn is widely known to work on cars on the side. That's terrific. I mean, everybody needs a good mechanic. That is, however, unless the work is being done on district property. So was any side hustle being done on district property?
I am not aware of a side hustle that was being done on district property.
Okay, because we do know that Mr. Tanner would leave his vehicle there and asked it to be serviced. So this employee was driving it to his place of business or his home and doing
can't,
the work?
I can't speak to that. That happened prior to my leadership. What I can tell you is it is not happening right now.
Okay. Well, again, I've brought this up several times, and not once have I been corrected that none of this work was being done off the school property. So the investigation, what did it show?
I think the AG's report speaks for itself. It answers all of these questions that community members, KPCW, the Park Record, Town Lift has asked of us. And if you have additional questions or follow-up, I encourage you to reach out to the AG's office. There were no criminal findings in their investigation.
Again, but they didn't have all of the details either. And that's I think, the gist of all of this is that they heard one thing and other things were happening. And I just don't think that they had the full impact of all of the information.
Then take it up with them on how they conduct their investigations, because that had nothing to do with us.
I have full confidence in the AG's office. If they found grounds or merit to pursue a criminal investigation, then they would have.
Okay. I'm out of time. Thank you for your time. We've got Park City Board of Education President Meredith Reed, along with Superintendent of Schools Lindsay Huntsman. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. In the studio now with an update from the Swanner Eco Center and Nature Preserve, the Director of Exhibits and Visitor Experience, Hunter Klingensmith. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's start with your upcoming volunteer events. Sounds like you've got a bunch of them.
Yeah, the season is really picking up. This is our busy time at the preserve with camps and things growing. So the first thing that we have going on is every Wednesday we'll be doing invasive weed pulls. We really love our volunteers and so appreciate all of the help that they bring to remove some of those invasive species that are really problematic on the preserve. So that's every Wednesday from 8:30 to 10:30 a.m. And then we're also doing another weed pull on June 20th in the evening on the solstice, and that's from 5 to 8 p.m., and that's our volunteer and beer event. So it includes pizza, beer, and non-alcoholic seltzers after we pull some weeds.
Okay. What else you got going on?
We've also got our demonstration garden is blooming and everything is happening in the garden there. So we're looking for a little bit of help with that. We'll have twice monthly projects in the garden, laying down new soil, planting plants, pulling weeds, those kind of things. And the next one is Wednesday, June 11th from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. And then we have a really fun new project coming up. We're going to do a mud day event for families. And that one is on June 29th, and we have shifts for volunteers from 9:30 a.m. to 12, or from 12 to 2:30 p.m., and volunteer roles will include helping to set up and take down stations, engaging with guests in activity areas, and restocking supplies. Come ready to be muddy.
Yeah, so what happens on Mud Day?
Yeah, so Mud Day will have a bunch of activities in the mud, so the goal is to get as messy as possible. And it's an opportunity to learn about how mud is important to our species on the preserve, and we're a wetland, so there's a lot of mud to be had.
Okay.
Yeah.
And people get muddy.
Yeah,
all right.
People get muddy. Right. We'll have a wash station, too.
Okay. And you also had, an amazing trash collection day, huh?
Yeah, we had collected over 2,000 pounds of trash during our Kimball Junction cleanup day that we do annually. So thanks to all of the volunteers that helped with that. We try to keep as much trash from ending up on the preserve as possible, so we clean up the whole Kimball area.
Great. So you also have some walks. Talks, Talks and Workshops Plan. Tell me about those.
Yeah, that's our adult education series. So the next one is actually tonight. So if you're interested in learning more about how to keep birds from colliding with your windows, which about a billion birds die each year from window collisions. So if you can help to prevent that, that's awesome. We're doing that in partnership with the Great Salt Lake Audubon, and they'll be here to talk about ways that you can prevent those. That's tonight from 6 to 7:30 p.m. You can register on our website or just show up. And then we also have Avian Adventures this Saturday morning. I think there's only two spots left in that. That's with the expert birder Kenny Frisch from 7 to 10 a.m. on the 24th. So that's a really fun way to get out onto the preserve. And then we'll do wildflower hikes with Basin Recreation Friday, June 6th from 8 to 10 a.m. Or from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. So we have a morning one or an evening one. And we'll just go out and hike on the north side trails on the preserve, look for wildflowers. And then our Wine Among the Willows is also happening again this year. That's our annual event where you get to drink wine, taste wine, learn about sustainability in wine on the preserve with a beautiful view. And that's Saturday, August 2nd from 3 to 6 p.m. It's a little ways away, but tickets actually go on sale on June 3rd. So it's $70 per person or $50 for SWANR members.
Okay. Let's see. You also have some upcoming family programs, as you mentioned, Mud Day.
Yeah, Mud Day is coming up on June 29th from 10 to 2. It's a drop-in activity. You can stop anytime during the day. We'll have mud crafts, animal track exploration in mud, sensory play, and some ways to learn about how wildlife use mud. And then we also have on Saturday, June 14th, from 11 to 12:30, we're doing a butterfly field trip. We just closed our butterfly exhibit, but we want to keep the learning going now that butterflies are out and about. So this will be with local butterfly enthusiast Todd Stout for a family-friendly field trip in Neff's Canyon, where we'll look for native butterflies.
Now, the amazing butterflies exhibit down sounds like it was a pretty successful exhibit.
Yeah, it was a great hit. We had over 5,000 visitors, which is a great number for us. We're sad to see it go, but we're excited for more things to come.
Okay, what do you got planned next?
We're doing a wetland supermarket exhibit that we're actually building that will open in October. During the summer, we don't do exhibits because we fill that space with summer camp kiddos.
Great.
And then we have another one coming in the spring of next year that's about extreme environments and how scientists use those to explore space as well. So that should be really fun too.
Okay. What's happening on the crane cam?
Oh, crane cam. The cranes are out. They are moving, so they're a little harder for us to keep the cam on them all the time. We are trying to do it, but it doesn't have a follow feature. So it's someone in the office making sure that it's on them. But there are two. They had two babies, the cranes that nested right outside of the eco center. And then we know there are a few other pairs with babies out there as well. One of the things we recommend is coming on a Saturday morning nature walk. That's one of the best times to look for those cranes. We'll lend you binoculars. You'll get to go out with a guide and actually make it out onto some of those areas where the cranes are. But other than that, you can just visit us, stop by, and we'll try to keep the cam on them as well.
Okay, sounds like plenty of birds out there too, huh?
Oh my gosh, yeah, it's bird season. So if you're into birding or you want to learn more about birding, join us at the Eco Center anytime.
Okay, and colts, that's what crane babies are, right?
Yeah, they're called colts. They're similar to horse babies, which are also called colts, and they get up and move off the nest pretty much as soon as they hatch. So usually it's the first few hours you'll see them on the nest, and then they go out, move around, start learning how to feed, and then they'll come back to the nest at night for like the first few days. And after that, they're just out on the move.
Yeah, so is the nest on the ground?
The nest is like in the water. Sometimes they're on the ground, sometimes they're in the water. They're usually built out of like cattail reeds. And it's just a pile of them. It really just looks like a pile of reeds.
Okay, and of course you've got your regular ongoing events.
Yep, ongoing events. We're doing Saturday morning nature walks. The climbing wall is open again now that the butterflies exhibit is out. That's on Saturdays and Sundays in the afternoon. You have to sign up on the website. And then we're still doing our regular Sunday craft activities from 11 to 1, drop-in on Sundays.
Okay. Hey, Hunter, thanks so much.
Thanks, Leslie.
Hunter Klingensmith, again, is the director of the Exhibits and Visitor Experience. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW.